Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Vecini. We are presented by The Athletic. Today on the show, Dave Dufour is here, and we are going to talk about one thing, of which there are many topics that we can discuss within that one thing, but it's trades. Today is December 15th. It is NBA trade kickoff day. There's trade deadline day, and realistically, while trades can be made ahead of December 15th, December 15th is the day where a wide swath of the NBA is opened up to be traded because it's the day that free agents that signed last offseason are eligible to be traded. So I've brought on Dave. We're going to talk about some of the potential trade targets. We're going to kind of reset the board a little bit here and break down just some of the more intriguing names, some of the more intriguing potential moves on the market right now. Dave, before we get into that, you had something very, very important, near and dear to my heart, that you wanted to talk about on the pod.
Yeah, you know, over the last couple weeks, I realized I had a hole in my cooking game. And, and that hole is the size of a pizza. I did not have the ability to just have a go-to crust if I needed to make a pizza at home. Which, as a guy who, I pride myself on my home cooking. Like, I'm a good home cook. Not being able to make pizza from scratch, that's a glaring weakness. I've got a good sourdough recipe, and I actually, we talked about this, I decided to go ahead and just pull out all of my bread making stuff. I've got the sourdough starter going now because I'm committed to being able to make a good pizza dough, and I came to the master. When you asked me to do your podcast, it was fortuitous timing, my friend, because I was about to text you to ask, hey man, what am I doing wrong here? Why am I not getting enough air in this crust? And I think I've solved it at this point. Number one, my yeast is not activated enough. Number two, my fermenting is going poorly because I'm not giving it enough time. I have to decide I'm going to make pizza before 3 o'clock in the afternoon if I want to eat it that night. So that's where I'm at.
Yeah, you're talking to someone who does not really do pizza. Like, I don't.
But you do bread.
Yeah,
I mean, you do airy bread, right?
Like, I do some bread. Yeah, like I've like done focaccia? Sourdough. I've done sourdough a couple of times. I'm not great at it either, to be honest. Like, I'm really not awesome at making
bread. Okay, so are you a cookie baker?
Yeah,
see, like, because somebody tells me they're into baking, I just assume you can do it all. Like, if I tell you I'm into cooking and you're like, oh, okay, can you make a steak? Oh, no, I'm good at everything but that. Like, bread is baking.
Look, like, I can make a loaf of bread, but, like, for the most part, it's sweets. Like, I'm really good with cookies. I'm really good with cakes. I'm really good with pies, tarts, like,
pastries.
Things of that nature, pastries.
Desserts. So you're a dessert baker.
Yeah, any sort of desserts I'm really good with.
I gotta clarify here. This is like being a 3-and-D wing and not playing defense.
Oh,
man.
No.
Like, I'm sorry.
I'm a specialist for sure, baby. Like, that's where it's at. Like, I'm trying to think, like, what would be the comparison here? Patrick Beverly, but, like, less scrappy in the kitchen.
You're more Duncan Robinson. You're coming off screens.
Yeah,
your
I'm
cookies,
good with that.
Right?
I can do that. Like, you know, Duncan can back cut. Like, cookies are back cutting for me. But, like, for the most part, it's cakes and pies. Like, I can nail that, like, to a T.
And Jimmy Butler is the baker man, right? Like, he definitely is, like, rolling them up, making dough.
Oh, that's
working inside, right? Like,
I mean,
yeah.
That guy is unbelievable. He's the
yeah.
Do you watch Great British Bake Off at all?
No. I don't really watch TV.
You got to do it.
And I definitely don't, like, I don't really watch reality TV. There's one show that I watch, and I didn't even. I'm bad about keeping up with stuff that's not the NBA, and it's Alone. I don't know if you've ever seen that show.
Yeah,
they send like 12 people out into the middle of nowhere during the winter in Canada, and they just survive alone. That show speaks to me. I love that show.
You got to dive into Yellowstone, Dave. Like, I feel that's your move.
Nope, I don't think so, man. Because I don't know. I don't know. I just don't really find myself getting into much. And I could watch The Virginian if I really needed to, you know, like the old show. I could get on.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just don't watch a lot of TV. So I've never seen the Great British Bake Off. So you'll have to kind of describe it. I do understand that it's supposed to be fun.
It's just like the most lovely show that you will find. It's literally just like 12 bakers competing against one another, but also being like the nicest people in the world to one another and like helping each other sometimes, despite the fact they're competing against each other, because everyone just wants to have a really good attitude and be very positive when they're in this thing. It's actually just like a really lovely, enjoyable thing to have on in the background, as well as to watch obsessively like Laura and I do.
That's okay. I'll check out an episode of it. I doubt I'd like it, but you never know. I don't know.
I watch a lot of
Jacques Pepin on YouTube.
See, like I think that Bake Off is one of those things where if you just need to remind yourself that like humanity is very nice and like positive, this is a really good, it's a really good thing to like kind of just be like, hey, this is good. I enjoy this.
I watched Steph Curry for that.
That's a good call. Holy shit. Congrats to Steph Curry. He broke the NBA's all-time three-point makes record last night. What a fun moment that was. We got Spike Lee diving in the background. We got Pete Davidson going nuts courtside. What a beautiful moment.
Was Pete Davidson the second biggest celebrity there?
I don't know. Pete Davidson's definitely a thing now. There's no way he was the second biggest celebrity there. The thing is, though, that like they caught Pete Davidson in the background celebrating right when Steph made it. Like, there's a good photo of him. He's in this pink hoodie, and with his blonde hair, he's just like going nuts. It was pretty good.
Okay. So there was a photo that stood out to you. It wasn't like you were like, here's the list of celebrities, and you had them, and that was your ranking. Because I was going to – first of all, I would be like, what the hell, New York? Come on. You can do better than that.
No, I'm sure there were more famous people there.
I don't know, 1994 playoffs Bulls Knicks, and it's like Dana Carvey's in the building. Come on, man.
Let's move to basketball now that we've talked about this. One thing that we just want to hit on real quick is that Danny Ainge is now running the Utah Jazz. He has been named the president of basketball operations and the alternate governor. I don't think this is a surprise to people around the league, because he's been like within the organization for a little while, and he and Ryan Smith are the owner of the Utah Jazz slash governor of the Utah Jazz are very close, apparently. So I don't think people are stunned by this move, but it's definitely a choice to go down this road, I think.
I mean, there were rumors that a more official position was in the works over the summer.
Yeah.
But I kind of thought once they did the special advisor thing and you know, it seemed like, you know, Justin Zanuck was going to continue to make the decisions, but just with Danny Ainge's input, I didn't expect a change. And it's just a little bit weird that it would happen now. Like, it's not like the Jazz are stumbling. I mean, and not that these things are often tied to performance or anything like that, because even bringing Danny in as a consultant didn't make a lot of sense after the best season that the Jazz have had since Karl Malone and John Stockton were playing there. So I didn't get it then. I don't really get it now. This alternate governor thing actually is very interesting to me, and I'll need to look into the mechanics on this and probably make a call to Larry Kuhn and just try to figure out, hey, like, What does this mean? The truth of the matter is, it does now seem like Danny Ainge is going to be the decision maker. Like, this is not even de facto. If he's the alternate governor, that is the guy who's signing off on anything.
Right.
So that's interesting. And that's all I can say right now. But it is interesting.
And the other part of this that's interesting is the Justin Zanuck part. Justin Zanuck has been one of the better executives in the NBA for a while now. And it is strange to me now that he has essentially been passed over twice by smart organizations. The Milwaukee Bucks hired John Horst over him after giving him the interim general manager tag, if I remember correctly, during their transition away from John Hammond. And then now the Utah Jazz, after Dennis Lindsay left, last year, have decided to not give Justin Zanuck this job and give it to Danny Ainge instead. Justin Zanuck is one of the most well-respected general managers in the NBA. If I was any team, look, I don't know if Justin Zanuck wants to leave Utah. I don't know if he has any interest in doing this. Like, this does not come from a place of reporting. But if I was another organization and I had a potential opening at the general manager slash president of basketball operations position, I don't think there's a better candidate who could potentially be on the market than Justin Zanuck. Because, I mean, look, he played a significant role in building the Utah Jazz, who were, what, the best regular season team of the last 2 years now, potentially 3 years, depending on how this season goes. So I think that's the part of it that surprises me most, is that we're now in a place where Justin Zanuck has been pushed down to the number two level again.
Potentially, right? Like, there's another scenario here where this is just rich billionaire too busy to handle the day-to-day stuff when you actually have to. And Danny Ainge, all right, so you're the owner now. I don't know. Again, for us that understand the mechanics of it, we get it, that Danny Ainge is now basically the boss. Like, he is running the whole thing. But I wonder if on their side, the intention is something a little less than that, if you're catching my drift. Like, where essentially he is the proxy for ownership and not so much on the basketball ops. Now, certainly ownership still has to sign off on all this stuff, but I wonder if it's more of that than anything else. Like, Danny is maybe only going to be on the back end. Now, that's what I'm saying. This is the intention. I'm guessing out loud here. Because literally, I just found out about this right before we started recording.
Yeah,
but
I mean, Tony Jones is reporting. There is a scenario. Tony Jones is reporting that he's the CEO of basketball operations. Like,
I mean, that sounds like he's going to be the GM, basically, or whatever the hell that is. Because the titles are they're nebulous.
Yeah, that feels like Danny's the guy in charge, and yeah, I'm just kind of I'm not surprised. I guess that Danny Ainge is back in basketball. I am surprised that the Jazz have decided to pass over Justin Zanuck in order to give Danny Ainge this job. We will see how that plays out moving forward. But there is one, like, random, and let's maybe transition into talking trades now, because there is one random move that I've been thinking about for a little while now that I kind of wonder if it makes sense, especially now that Danny Ainge is running the Utah Jazz. I've been thinking about how Utah needs another high-level perimeter defender, and I've been wondering if Marcus Smart makes sense there. And I wonder if a Marcus Smart for Joe Ingles in a first-round pick deal makes sense for them. And I wonder if it makes sense for Boston, because Boston needs someone that can come in and be a shooter and a ball mover on offense, because that is where Boston is struggling right now. They need someone who can come in, who can be an unselfish player and who can hit 40% of his threes and who can run some secondary ball screens next to Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. Joe Ingles can do that stuff. I kind of wonder if he would be a more effective piece for them than Marcus Smart is right now, to be honest. Obviously, Joe Ingles is a free agent at the end of the season, and he is a little bit older. I believe he's 34 at this point. But Marcus Smart, on the other side, he actually really does fill a need for Utah. Utah does not really need play initiation and like the secondary play that Joe Ingles brings. They have more than enough shooting with guys like Mike Conley, Donovan Mitchell, Bojan Bogdanovic, Royce O'Neal, Jordan Clarkson. Like, they're fine in that front. They can actually make it work with Marcus Smart in a pretty significant way, I think. I wonder if, you know, look, the Utah Jazz's first round pick is not going to be particularly high. Like, I don't think that it's a substantial investment for them. They would get to have Marcus Smart on this extension. Maybe the extension might not totally work for them because they think that they need to cut salary with some of these extensions that they have kicking in next year and some of the long-term money they already have on the books. But I think Marcus Smart really helps Utah. I think Joe Ingles would actually really help the Celtics. I think the Celtics just need a little bit more, maybe a little bit more ball movement and unselfishness on the team. Not to say that Marcus Smart is a selfish player. I think that Joe Ingles would just really help on that front. And then on top of it, I think that the best move for the Celtics, and we'll talk about this, maybe we'll talk about this in a minute. I'll give you the floor, Dave, on this idea.
I mean, I definitely see the Marcus Smart fit in Utah. The Ingles fit, I don't know. I mean, a lot of the stuff you said is true, but the other part is 34 years old, and like Utah is already managing his minutes. I mean, he was gassed in the playoffs quite a bit last year. I just don't know if, I mean, if you're Boston, does it move the needle enough? And it, like you mentioned, that first round pick, I mean, it's a second round pick, basically. Not to say that there's no value or utility in having those late, you know, those picks in the 20s. We're seeing that there are not really any bums in the league, right? So you can pick up a guy who can play for you in the 20s. This is a different world we live in. So there is a little bit of value there. But I just think Marcus Smart, plain and simple, is a guy who should get you more than Joe Ingles than a late first-round pick. I think you should be able to, if not get a young player who's got more potential.
Right.
And I don't think Boston's looking that way, although they certainly could, because it's not like Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum are old.
So let me...
If Boston wanted to keep the powder dry, so to speak, and think about the next couple of years, right, where Marcus Smart is likely not a long-term piece here. His salary is going to be too easy to move. Like, he's one of the things that they're going to be able to trade. I as much as Brad Stevens loves him, I think that ultimately they're going to be forced to. And I get that's why you come up with Joe Ingles and Marcus Smart. But I wonder if they couldn't, you know, find a team that is a contender that has something better than Joe Ingles. But that trade works for Utah for sure, because it gives them the ability to play Conley or Donovan Mitchell, depending on matchups down the stretch. You also could play all three of those guys. And Marcus Smart is a willing shooter, which matters in Utah quite a bit. Like, he's going to love jacking up those early shot clock threes in transition. He'll fit in very well there. And I actually think he's a better ball mover than he gets credit for. It's just that the role that they're asking him to play in Boston is not the one that he can play. But in Utah, he would fit in perfectly. I mean, imagine him catching the ball in the wing in semi-transition, going up to shoot, because you know he wants to shoot it, so the defense is coming, and finding the Royce O'Neal in the corner for an open three. We can see it. He would fit right in. And defensively, we know what he brings. That would give them – like, if Utah could get Marcus Smart, I would say that's a conference finals team, because that's the guy that they're missing, is a guy you can put at the point of attack – to make things hard on him. I mean, Rudy Gobert's lift is so extreme in the playoffs that he gets blamed for everything because of it. But Marcus Smart would be enough, I think, that I could put them over I could see them winning over Phoenix or Golden State in a series.
So
right? Like, it'd be a toss-up. Whereas right now, I for sure am saying Phoenix and Golden State win.
So here is my pitch on why I think that if I was Boston, this makes sense. If they move that Marcus Smart deal, they actually have like a pretty real pathway to a similar amount of cap space to what the Bulls had this offseason. Mm-hmm. And I think that more than anything, what Boston needs to do is they need to create flexibility this summer to be able to reshape almost the entire roster outside of Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum are fine. Like, it is the craziest thing in the world to me that people are bringing up Jaylen Brown as a potential trade target. The Boston Celtics, every team in the league, every single team in the NBA is looking for a two-way wing who can create shots, who can knock down threes, who can defend at a damn near all-defense level. Every team is looking for one of those guys that's 25 years old and under. The Celtics have two of them. It is such a ridiculous competitive advantage for them moving forward. Just given point guards are not the most difficult thing to find on the market. The Celtics have not done that well yet, but you can find them. Centers are available. Like, you're not going to have a problem finding a center in the NBA. The fact that they have two elite level wings, those are the hardest things to find in the NBA. You can build around them. The Celtics have not done a great job of building around them thus far. Like, looking back, to me, the guy that would have made the most sense in the world for them was like Alex Caruso, right? They should have signed someone like that this past offseason. They had the mechanics to do it. It would have been pretty easy. That guy makes more sense than, for instance, Dennis Schroeder on this roster, right? So, to me,
what was Boston thinking? Like, because they wound up with Dennis Schroeder, right? Like,
right.
It's not like they were like, oh, we got to get Dennis.
And it's not like a terrible long-term deal. Like, it's a one-year deal.
No, it's fine.
Get out of it. It's going to be fine, right? They may move him at the deadline, just kind of finish the whole process, right?
Yeah.
If you're Boston, though, you actually have a pretty real... If you move Marcus Smart for an expiring contract like a Joe Ingles, right? You actually have a pretty real pathway to real flexibility this summer. You can do something like not pick up the Al Horford... What is it? I think it's like $13 million guaranteed, something like that. You create $13 million of cap space that way. You create the $17 million of cap space that you get by not having Marcus Smart on the roster for next season. I personally think that it would be pretty easy to move some of their younger players. Like, if they wanted to move that Romeo Langford deal off of the books for a second round pick or something, I think a lot of teams would probably be pretty interested in taking a flyer on him. It's actually pretty easy for them to get to a point where they have real flexibility going into this offseason with basically like Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Robert Williams as like the three guys that they're building around, and then keep a couple of young guys on the roster as well.
I mean,
if I'm them, I'm trying to do that because I think that this season for Boston, look, they're not good enough to win a title, right? Like we just strongly believe that, right, Dave?
Yeah, yeah. They're not winning a title this year. I mean, they're a play-in team? Maybe?
Yeah, like, you know, they're somewhere between the 6 and the 8 seed.
Yeah,
maybe the 5 and the 8 seed, right?
Right. If they get the 5 seed, they snuck there.
Totally. So you're in that ballpark, right? You and I both believe that just because of the ridiculous advantage they have of having Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, that their aims should be higher. I kind of think that this season does not matter for Boston. The season that matters is next season, because that's when Jaylen Brown has 2 years left on his deal going into next season. They need to start proving starting next season to Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum that they're building something sustainable that they can actually build around them long term. Now, I think that there is a world also where I wonder if they could be like the third team in a deal for Ben Simmons and end up with Ben Simmons, right? Like, that gets complicated, and I don't know how you would necessarily do it salary wise. Like, it would have to involve Al Horford going somewhere else, and then like it'd almost have to involve maybe we'll pitch the Ben Simmons Celtics deal later because I have an idea.
Someone asked me about Jaylen Brown for Ben Simmons, and I was like, why would Boston give up Jaylen Brown?
No, I have a...
People are crazy, man.
Yeah, no, I would much rather have Jaylen Brown than Ben Simmons. I have a weird three-team trade that I think could actually make some sense for everyone.
Is Oklahoma City in it?
No, it involves Portland. But we'll talk about that when we move to Ben Simmons here. And we'll talk about Ben in a minute.
Okay.
As we kind of move through this. But if you're Boston, you need to start proving to Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum starting next season, I think, that you can build a championship contender. The best way for them to do that, I think, is to clear out everything on the roster outside of Robert Williams next to those guys and try to build new, just like the Chicago Bulls did around Zach LaVine and Nikola Vucevic this summer. Like that to me is the pathway for the Celtics. Get all sorts of flexibility, do it that way. I frankly think, and this is why I go back to the Joe Ingles and a first round pick for Marcus Smart move, because I frankly think they'd probably be, if not the same, maybe even a little bit better with Joe Ingles right now than Marcus Smart, because I think that they just really need the specific skills that Joe Ingles brings to having like a competent, well-flowing offense. But man, I think that that's the pathway for the Celtics. They need to kind of clear out everyone around Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. Not trade Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum.
That just doesn't make any sense to me. Unless, again, I think that what happens is you get two really good players and people start to put their own spin on everything. Oh, well, mm-hmm. Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown don't get along. I don't know. I don't pay attention to any of that stuff. So yeah. It will catch me by surprise if that's true. But we heard that about Embiid and Simmons a long time ago, too. And certainly, I guess that has kind of come to head. But I don't care. You've got two of those guys that are really, really impossible to find in the league. You don't give up either one of them. Because guess what? Look around the league. You know what the Bulls did? They went out and they got a couple of connectors, and then they duplicated Zach LaVine with DeMar DeRozan, right? They've got an inside-out attack with guards now. So smart teams figure it out. Is Boston smart? That's what we're going to find out. Is Boston going to find a way to put three guys around Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown that maximize them? Forget the team stuff. Stop thinking about it as a basketball team. You got to optimize those two guys and then build the team out. You've got the hard things to get. Boston is yet to do that, right? For whatever reason, stubbornness, whatever you want, the offense where everybody tries to touch the ball but nobody ever gets to the basket or gets to the free throw line, that they're still running, it's frustrating. So there are systemic issues there. Part of it is not having good fits around those two guys. Part of it is the way that they do things just isn't very good. So, you know, improve or don't. And then those guys leave as free agents. This is the beauty of free agency.
Yeah, they need to figure out how they can build around. And look, like, I don't mean to absolve Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, right? Like, I think both of them
be better.
Like, well, they could particularly, I think, both of them. Some of the issues that people say about those two playing together, I think, are real. They both do tend to stop the ball. Jaylen Brown is not an incredible passer in terms of making reads for his teammates. I think Jason Tatum is a pretty good passer, but Jason Tatum has a propensity to hang on to the ball a little bit more and a little bit longer and survey the scene to where it can sometimes stagnate what Boston is doing on offense. And that combo together, I think, can lead to stagnant offense. But to me, Chicago, again, is showing that with guys that are great connective tissue players like Lonzo Ball and Alex Caruso, kind of like you're saying, Dave, you can work through having guys like Zach LaVine and DeMar DeRozan, both of whom do like to survey, do like to create their own shot, and both of whom are willing passers, but much better on the scoring front than on the passing front. You can make that work. And I think that what the Bulls did this summer is the pathway for the Celtics. And I think that if I'm Brad Stevens, who's now running the show, I think there are real pathways to get there. And I think that the pathways get there, to be honest, probably by moving Marcus Smart. I think that that's kind of the move for them at this point. I feel bad saying it because I think Marcus Smart is Mr. Celtic and he kind of stands for everything that that organization has stood for over the course of the last, 7 years that he's been there, it feels like. But I don't know. I'm just at the point where I think that it might be time for a change there. And you can't make the change. You don't keep Marcus Smart to move Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. As much as I like Marcus Smart. So.
Yeah, I mean, that is legit. Like, I don't know. Anybody thinking that this team should or is going to move Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum? Now, watch them trade Jason Tatum next week, and I look like a real idiot. But I don't see that happening.
Okay, let's take a quick commercial break and then we'll move to the Ben Simmons of it all, because I think that that is the biggest name on the market that actually could be moved this season. Let's talk about a different kind of performance than what we're talking about with the NCAA tournament. They want to help your performance in the bedroom. Joy Mode, you know, just like on the basketball court, sometimes you might have an off night. Maybe you're playing okay and you want to take your game up a level even. That's where Joy Mode is going to come in. Don't grab some over-the-counter pills that you see at a gas station. They're going to often contain unregulated chemicals, suggest unsafe doses, carry the risk of several other health problems down the road. That's why we've partnered with Joy Mode. Whether you're looking to spice up your intimate moments or increase your confidence in the bedroom, Joy Mode makes all natural and science-backed supplements dedicated to helping men perform better across their core functions. Their trademark product, the Sexual Performance Booster, is every man's solution for increased performance. It's like a pre-workout, but for sex. And get this, all ingredients have been assessed in peer-reviewed journals and researched in humans. Imagine this, it comes in a palm-sized packet, like your favorite electrolyte powder. Just simply mix it with 6 to 8 ounces of water 45 minutes before sexual activity begins, and you're going to watch the magic unfold. Redefine your intimacy and go to use joymode.com for 20% off with code GAMETHEORY. That's GAMETHEORY. That's 20% off and free shipping with code GAMETHEORY. Not only is this the only supplement you'll need in the bedroom, but it also supports blood vessel support, cardiovascular and heart health, athletic performance, blood pressure, and general erection function. So why settle for anything less? Whether you're happy or unhappy with your performance in the bedroom, why not perform even better with Joy Mode? Okay, we're back. Ben Simmons is... Look, I think it would be crazy for the 76ers to not move Ben Simmons this season, if only because you don't know how many years you're going to have this level of Joel Embiid. If I am Daryl Morey, I personally could not waste a year of Joel Embiid's prime messing around with this Ben Simmons thing. Now, I think that there are a number of different ways that this could play itself out. And the problem for Daryl Morey is that, say, Damian Lillard comes available after the deadline, after you move Ben Simmons, you're going to be kicking yourself, right? Because, man, that's the guy that they need, to be honest. Like, they just really need Damian Lillard. They need a second star who can play the lead guard position and initiate offense and be a shot creator at the end of games.
And absolutely get blistered on defense because you've got Joel Embiid back there to back you up. It doesn't
absolutely
matter.
Right. So yeah. It's complicated. And I've been trying to formulate different moves for the Sixers. And I keep coming back to two of them that I think make sense. So let's start with the Blazers, who lost again last night to the Phoenix Suns. They've lost 9 of 10. Look, Damian Lillard has been very clear that he doesn't want to be moved. And for as long as he says that, like, to you both privately and in the public, I think it's a really tough sell to move Damian Lillard, even though I think this roster isn't really going anywhere right now. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think I agree. And I hadn't really thought that way until Mo brought it up on Nerder last week. And I was just like, you know what? Yeah, it's time. I mean, how old is Dame? 31?
He's 31, I believe, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, look, injuries happen all the time, but this is an old man injury.
The ab injury.
Muscular, yeah, man. And you have to start thinking, like, if you're Portland, are we going to win in the next 2 or 3 years? Probably not. Probably not. But I also am I'm of two minds here because I know we're talking trades, but I also am fine if Portland wants to say, hey, no, it doesn't matter. We're cool. Damian Lillard is our guy. He can sink with the ship. You know what I mean? It's fine with me.
I think it's tough either way. I think that regardless of what this is, and look, this is complicated by the fact that the Portland Trailblazers have an interim general manager right now in Joe Cronin. Damian Lillard came out last night and said that he feels that Joe Cronin should get the job, right? So that could change things as well. I think that in general, this is a very complicated issue. Now, if Portland needs to sit down and have a conversation with Damian Lillard and say, look, we need you here for 3 years or we need to move you. Like, there's not really an in between. We would be willing to give you this. I mean, should they be willing to give him this max extension that he's eligible for this summer, or he'll be making $50 million when he's 36 years old?
No, no, he's not that level of player. I mean, for me at least, and I mean, this is actually the first time I've said it on a podcast, but it's also the first time anybody's presented this specific scenario, which is that giant extension. Like, no, man, I just don't think Damian Lillard can be the best player on a championship team. He's not that dude. He doesn't make the guys around him good enough. That's the difference. Now, could he go maybe win a title with Joel Embiid? Maybe, because Joel Embiid would be the best player on that team.
Well, and they'd have two of the 10 best players, or two of the 12, let's say, best players in the league. Right?
Two of the 15.
Sure.
Let's say. I don't know. That's just literally just pulling it off the top of my head. But I think that they're – I just don't – if I was Portland, I would not want to be locked into Damian Lillard for any other reason than the fact that he is the greatest trailblazer of all time. If you're only thinking about, all right, can we win a title in the next 3 years with Dame? No. Hell no. No, you're not going to. Not unless you're getting somebody else in there. And I think we know the answer to that at this point.
So if that's the case, I wonder if there is a move to be made here. Now, I let me throw a scenario at you. If you are Portland, you can move Damian Lillard to the Philadelphia 76ers. You can get Ben Simmons, Tyrese Maxey, Matisse Thybulle, God knows how many first round picks, right? Let's say like 3 or 4 first round picks, right? And I think Philly probably has to do that at the end of the day. Now, is where...
what was the deal?
If you do...
Did you say Matisse?
Yes.
Man, you don't, that's deep.
If you are Philly, you are holding out everything at this point for a superstar top 15 guy within this Ben Simmons deal. Portland is going to be able to take them to the woodshed, I think. Like, if they decide to move Damian Lillard,
if I was Portland, if I was Philly, I'd be just trying to convince Ben Simmons to come back and play. Because I would absolutely not tear my monster defense apart for Damian Lillard.
I probably would, but that's just me.
Yeah, well, like, different sensibilities, maybe. Yeah. But I also just think, I don't know, man. Maybe I just don't think Damian Lillard's all that great.
I think he's pretty amazing. I'm like,
I think he's okay. I think he's pretty, I mean, he's good, right? Like, he's an all-star level player. I'm not saying that. I just don't think that he is I don't think he puts him over the top, plain and simple. I think that he's going to get roasted so hard defensively. And they wouldn't have guys to back him up, because if you're getting rid of Matisse, now you don't have maybe the best defensive guard in the league, second, third best defensive guard in the league. I don't know, man.
Look,
I'd rather have Ben Simmons, maybe. if I'm Philly,
I wouldn't.
Rather try to make Simmons work.
I would not in the playoffs, because I think we know at this point that you can't win.
They're not going to guard him.
You might be able to win a title with Damian Lillard and Joel Embiid.
If you're telling me I can get Lillard for Simmons, oh, I'm all in. If you're telling me I can get him for Simmons, Maxey, and some picks, I'm in. But once you start getting, like, all right, now you're taking apart huge parts of what's going to make Lillard work, right? Like, Matisse Thybulle makes Damian Lillard acceptable on defense with him and Joel Embiid.
I don't think the Dame is as disastrous on defense as you do. He's not good. Like, don't get me wrong. Awful. He's not a plus defender. But I don't think he, like, is going to get...
He dies on every screen, man. He just... when he tries on defense, even it's just not great.
They still have
Philly's going to have to defend.
Like, they still have your guy to handle this in the biggest moments in Danny Green.
Yeah, no. All right, see, this is the thing, and I'm the only Danny Green realist. I think Danny Green is not that guy anymore. Danny Green hasn't been that guy for a while, and honestly, even at his peak, Danny Green was never the "Hey, go shut that guy down" guy.
No, he's always been a better help defender. Yeah.
Make that guy work. He's the greatest transition defender in NBA history. It's him or Bill Russell, and I didn't see enough Bill Russell. That's a joke. I don't know if Danny Green is the best, but he's very, very good at transition. He's one of the greatest team helpers of the modern era. This is part of why Danny Green has been so good and on so many good defenses. But he was never that guy, and he's definitely not now. Like, I don't know that – like, Danny Green isn't the Danny Green that he was 2 years ago. I mean, he's lost not. A couple steps.
Yeah.
So I just think that to dismantle your defense, I don't know, man. I just don't know if Dame is, and I know that this defies convention, but that's a guy that did not adjust well, and we can blame it on injury or whatever, but he did not adjust well to not being able to grift. And I don't think it's that.
I don't think that it's the fouling thing. I think it's that he has this abdominal injury and that he needs to, like, honestly not play for a little while. And I don't know if he's willing to do that necessarily. Like, I think that it would help him to sit down and continue to be out for a little while. But the problem is that Portland is just so disastrous without him.
And now CJ's out for a couple games. Not a long time, but yeah, not as long as you would think.
Yeah, what I believe was like a pneumothorax, almost like a collapsed lung.
Collapsed lung, yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. So let's say that Portland falls off a cliff here and that they have to move, or they decide that a Damian Lillard move is worth it. I think that they're going to be able to take Philadelphia to the woodshed in terms of a deal, right?
Probably.
Like, I think they'd be able to get whatever they want. So it's Ben Simmons, it's Matisse Thybulle, it's Tyrese Maxey, and it's 3 or 4 first-round picks, right? What is stopping Philadelphia, or what is stopping Portland, I'm sorry, from then turning and going to Boston and saying, we will move you, we will give Ben Simmons to you. You give us 3 or 4 first-round picks, we match with the Al Horford deal. And then they're rebuild is now they have all of their own picks. They have 3 or 4 Philadelphia picks. They have 3 or 4 Boston picks. They have Matisse Thybulle. They have Tyrese Maxey.
Great for Portland.
And you can get whatever young guys from Boston that you want as well. Aaron Naismith. You can bring Peyton Pritchard home. Like, whatever you want to do. That kind of works for me. That's like 8 first round picks. That's Matisse Thybulle. It's Tyrese Maxey for Damian Lillard.
I mean, it's great for Portland.
And if you're Boston, I think you do that because Ben Simmons is like the guy that works with Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. He's a great defender. They become maybe the most switchable team in the league. They don't need him to be the shot creator. Like, he can run transition offense.
He can play center.
He can play center. He can play the 4. Like, you can go get a shooting point guard. He fills a lot of holes for them, I think.
So, I mean,
that's like, to me, that's like kind of interesting, like across the board for everyone, right?
I mean, it's certainly interesting. I mean, I'm very interested if I'm Portland. Boston, great. You don't give up anything and you get an all-star, like a legit all-star. All right, yeah. One of the best defenders in the league. Yeah, all right, cool. I just, man, the Philly thing, and I get it because I understand who Damian Lillard is and that idea, but I think about the team too much.
Yeah.
And I just think it, I don't know. I just think that you, it's a worse team. And again, I'll be proven wrong once they get to the playoffs without Damian Lillard and Tyrese Maxey turns into, you know, a baked potato, but I don't know. I think I'd rather just see what Tyrese Maxey could do. So that's just me who doesn't have a job on the line if they suck.
I'll pitch you my second idea just to kind of show like how precipitous I think the drop is in terms of like the quality of player that they could get if they decide not to go Damian Lillard, right? Because like, I don't think that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is available. I don't think Jaylen Brown's available. I don't think they're getting any of these young stars. Like, you could convince me
it's
that
like
maybe,
CJ, right?
Well, I was going to say what I think is a better fit for them than CJ.
Okay. I just meant like the caliber of player is around CJ McCollum, right?
Yes. So my idea is another three-team deal. It would be you send Ben Simmons to Indiana, who Shams has reported, and everyone has reported that Indiana does have interest in Ben Simmons, right? You move Ben Simmons to Indiana. You then move Gordon Hayward to Philadelphia. And then Indiana moves Miles Turner
and to Charlotte.
TJ Warren or Caris LeVert, you know, plus you get Philadelphia can get picks, Charlotte can get picks, whatever we need, right? But
now that you're kind cooking.
That kind of fills a few different things because
that's a great one. Yeah.
Gordon Hayward makes sense, I think, with this current iteration of the Philadelphia 76ers. He's a great shooter. He can initiate sets. Part of the reason that Gordon Hayward signed in Charlotte was that he wanted to be like the guy who takes the last shot, right? Like he wanted to be the guy at the end of games. He can still kind of be that in Philadelphia, just on a better team. Like they're still going to run, I think, most of their sets through him. It allows Philadelphia to keep Tyrese Maxey and Matisse Thybulle. Maybe they get some additional assets from Charlotte or from Indiana, you know, depending on, you know, however you want to move the picks. I'm just kind of trying to come up with a framework of a deal as opposed to what the actual deal would be. Cause I think that the value is off a little bit on, you know, all three of those sides and that you'd have to fill in the cracks. But the emergence of Miles Bridges and Charlotte's decision to not sign him to an extension means that they're going to have to pay him probably $25 million this offseason per year. And I wonder if they would, I don't want to say they're trying to get off of the Gordon Hayward deal because maybe they're pretty comfortable with it still. But I wonder if maybe they, given the fact that they just signed Terry Rozier to an extension as well, they wouldn't mind getting off of the Hayward money in order to potentially make some cap space. You can get the TJ Warren deal. He can be a free agent in the offseason. And then you fill your hole at the center position, which is a bigger need now than the wing, given the fact they have Miles Bridges, they have PJ Washington. They desperately need interior defense. I wonder if a Miles Turner for Gordon Hayward kind of deal helps both of those teams all three of these teams to a substantial extent.
I've thought extensively about Miles Turner in Charlotte.
Yeah.
But the guy that I keep coming back to in Charlotte that would be awesome and you could cut out Indiana completely is Ben Simmons. If Ben Simmons could go be the center in Charlotte, you would have the greatest, or at least greatest to my mind, most fun basketball team that you could put together.
Yeah.
Just think about the lineup combinations they can run. And now, yeah, they're going to be small, but Ben Simmons is not small. And I think that you can, good Lord, the idea of that team in transition, I mean, they would just murder in transition.
They would.
And now you wouldn't have, although I do think that Ben Simmons is a good rim protector, he's not a rim protector in the style of Miles Turner. You're not going to funnel a lot of stuff to him. But if you watch the way Charlotte defends anyway, because they don't have that guy now, they don't do a lot of that. So it's a lot of rotations is Miles Bridges and PJ Washington rotating over and stuff like that. They use their length. That could be a switchable monster. That team could, with Ben Simmons as the five,
yeah. Whew,
and then you still get your Gordon Hayward move to Philadelphia, and you cut out Indiana.
I think I would still rather have just Damian Lillard if I was Philadelphia.
Oh, sure. No, I just thought we were talking about making Charlotte even better. That's the only thing I care about in this trade here is Charlotte.
Making Charlotte better. So let's talk about that
more
momentarily.
Fun, more fun, right?
I'm skeptical on the idea of pairing Ben Simmons with LaMelo. I think that the idea of it is great. I think, do we trust that Ben Simmons would...
Too much genius.
Do we think that Ben Simmons would buy into not having the ball in his hands as much as he'd have to?
Look, I think so, yeah. I think so. I think LaMelo is that guy. And I look, the vibes in Charlotte are much better than the vibes in Philly have ever been. Ever. The whole time that Ben Simmons has been in the league. The vibes have never really been good there. And I just think that when you have a leader like LaMelo, because he is a leader. You watch, just natural leader. No, you watch as a rookie. He came in there, and those guys were respecting him. And they were. The thing about it is, he's fun to play with. And I think he can win you over, even if you want to be resistant to him, which you see how everyone loves LaMelo Ball now? Now that we've gotten to know him, you can't resist him. LaMelo Ball is an irresistible force of nature as a personality, I think, and as a player. Mm-hmm. And I think that anybody who comes in there is going to pick up on the vibes, and they're going to jump right in. And if not, well, LaMelo is the star, bro. So what are you going to do?
Yeah,
if this is the issue, then who the hell is going to ever trade for Ben Simmons? If you have to worry, because Ben is not going to – look, if you're a championship approaching team, like if you're a contender – Ben Simmons is not the best player on your team because he's not going to be the best player on that sort of team. Plain and simple. And if he doesn't know that, then his people should let him know that. You're going to have to come in and you're going to be this number two guy at best unless you want to go to Orlando. The Pelicans could probably put together a compelling offer.
Well, this is why I bring up Indiana, right? Because I think that Indiana could sell itself on not rebuilding. Because I think that that's just an organization that has never wanted to rebuild in the past, right?
Yeah. Well, you could do like a mini rebuild where you've got, I mean, Duarte is what, 24? Ben Simmons is 24. I think Sabonis is 25. I mean, here's the thing though. If you're saying skip a rebuild, well, you're literally just shuffling deck chairs then, right? If you're trading out, I mean, I still don't understand why you want to trade out Miles Turner. But if you're trading out Miles Turner,
I'll say this: if I was doing this, I would, I'd rather have Miles Turner than Sabonis. I mean, here's the fun thing: maybe you move Sabonis to Charlotte then. Which, by the way, if we're trying to implement fun,
no, that Sabonis is a fun killer to me.
Really?
I'm not a fan. Not a fan. Please don't send him to a fun team. I said this on Nerder last week. Send him. I mean, there aren't a lot of teams that aren't a ton of fun because even the bad ones are playing young players, and all the guys that come into the league now are
the Pacers
just,
are not fun
a little
right
bit
now, unfortunately.
Yeah, no joke. Why aren't they fun? It's a lot of Sabonis. That's all I'm saying. So
I don't think that like Sabonis is why they aren't fun. I think that they are not fun because the product is like a little bit stale and they don't have.
Yes.
Great guards. Like even Duarte is like a great rookie, but is
sure,
you know, not like the most exciting player, right?
He's fine for a 24-year-old guard.
Right. No, that's 100% right. So like I don't think it's Sabonis. I really enjoy watching Domantas Sabonis play. I love the way that he has incredible dexterity and dribble handoffs. I love the way he rolls to the basket. Like, I love how smart he is out of mid-post actions.
He
like,
never gets called for an over-the-back. I mean, that's a hell of a skill. Never gets called for an over-the-back.
And by the way, like, if we're talking about moving Sabonis somewhere, Nekias Duncan kind of threw me onto this with a piece that he wrote over at Basketball News. Go check out Nekias' work. He's great. How fun would Sabonis be on the Warriors?
Man.
All sorts of dribble handoff action. It's a good fit with Draymond Green defensively because they're both really smart positionally. You could run all sorts of the weird mid-post stuff that they like to implement. Like, they obviously have really enjoyed having Bielitsa this year. The Bielitsa thing has kind of fallen off a little bit as the season has progressed just because Nemanja is not quite good enough. But I wonder if Steve Kerr would be like, this is another basketball genius that we could make work within our scheme at an exceedingly high level.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
you're just out on Sabonis. You're a hater.
I'm not a fan of Sabonis. Like, I just not.
You're
like,
a hater.
Period. Not a hater. He's fine. Like, he's not a bum. I don't think he's a bum. I just, just keep him in Indiana. Just hang on to him. Build around Sabonis in Indiana. Let's see what that looks like. Oh, because we haven't seen what that looks like. Oh, yeah, that is. Listen, man. I mean, like, if Sabonis is your fifth starter, I think you're great. If he's your fourth starter, you're pretty good.
Your third starter. If he's in your
top, three, I don't know, man. I just don't get it. And in Indiana, he's been their best player or second best player throughout the whole time he's been there. So, you know, I'm not surprised that everybody thinks that they suck.
Yeah, look, like I'm not. I don't think Sabonis is like a top 25 guy like some people do.
Yeah.
Like I'm not there. I'll say that.
Okay.
But
I mean, he's a top 50 guy.
Yeah, I'll give him said that. Top 40. Is that, yeah, something like that.
Is that right? Top 50? Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I have to think about it. Maybe he's a top 75 guy.
Indiana fans are going to just attack and murder you.
No, because they know. No, because look, the only people watching the Pacers are Indiana fans and me. They know. Look, before the season, everybody was all pumped that they got Rick Carlisle, and I was like, okay, great. Now that they changed the roster at all? No. Okay, cool. What are we doing here?
Yeah,
I haven't even been covering the league that long, and I get the rhythms of it. That team was maxed out 3 years ago.
It was maxed out in the bubble. I think that's the when bubble, it maxed out.
The bubble was like 3 years ago. That's actually what I meant was the bubble.
Yeah. Okay. Let's. By the way, the bubble was summer 2020. We are now in December 2021. The bubble feels like it was literally 5 years ago.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's absolutely nuts.
Yeah.
The last guy I wanted to talk about here was, well, there are two other things. One of them is Indiana. So let's talk about Indiana. Joe Vardon came up with the idea of a Colin Sexton for Caris LeVert deal. The idea for that was that the Pacers have in the past had passing interest in Sexton, and Caris LeVert would be a really good fit with this current iteration of the Cavaliers that could use just one more offensive creator, maybe off the bench, maybe in the starting lineup. Not sure like what you would do with him necessarily in those contexts. But part of me doesn't hate it. I think more than anything, what I want is I want Cleveland to go make an aggressive move. I don't know if it's Caris LeVert necessarily. I think that they can go out and make an aggressive move using the Colin Sexton deal to go get a player that can help them now.
Man, you and I are just on different wavelengths. This is, might be the first time ever.
This is rare.
See, I want Cleveland to not do anything aggressive. I want Cleveland to be totally fine with where they are, which is pretty damn good.
They're,
I think they've
really
got a good
they're
shot.
A playoff team.
Hey, they got a great shot at winning the Central. Okay? If you look at their schedule, they've got an easy schedule, man, and this is a legit dominant defense. I wouldn't change anything. The vibes are immaculate. Just don't mess with it. Just let them be good. They're not going to win a title, and that's fine. You're so far ahead of where you ought to be. Just be good. Look, Kevin Love is back, and this is a great story. And I don't, unless he asks to get traded, they should not try to move him. Ricky Rubio has, I mean,
he's been really good.
Did what he does, but he did what he does, which is he comes into a situation that's a bit dysfunctional, and what does he do? He like. I don't know if it's him or him being around or if it's just that J.B. Bickerstaff is actually a really great coach, which I also think is true.
Yeah.
But just don't break up the team. Just keep them how they are. Look, if you can like find something on the margins, that's great. Maybe you a buyout guy or something like that.
But at a certain point, don't we want to
just see these guys get to play together and have joy now? And I know, again, it's a trade podcast and I'm just pouring water all over the hot stove, but I don't want to personally don't want them to make a move. But if they do, I need them to think long term, not just this year, because Garland and Mobley is now two of like that's a legit core that is going to do stuff like in 3 years. This is maybe like a conference finals team, right? Like, they're on that sort of trajectory. I just don't want to mess that up because, you know, the guy that they could really use right now that they don't have is Colin Sexton. Colin Sexton fits what they do perfectly. And I know we only got to see 8 games of it, but he improved as a playmaker this year. His defense was better. And I just think that if I were them, I know people are low on Colin Sexton, but Colin Sexton.
I'm higher on Colin than most, but
I'd rather have him than Caris LeVert, because, you know, this knee thing from Colin Sexton aside, I do think that you got to worry about LeVert's health. It's a constant issue. And I don't know, man. I just think that there's something to sticking with the guys you've got to a certain degree and the continuity that comes with that. I think it matters.
Well, to me, the reason that I think you move Colin Sexton now, if a deal comes along, is I don't want to pay Colin Sexton this summer. Because someone's going to give him $417 a year. Mm-hmm. Something like that. Like, I don't think that it'll be like a wild number. Like, I don't think he's going to get maxed.
So but I think someone. Why wouldn't they match that though? 417?
Yeah.
For that? I don't know, man. That's cheap.
I wouldn't want the longer term deal though, I don't think. Like, I think that it's a risky deal because he might not be worth that. Like, I'm going to be. Like, I like Colin a lot. He might be a bench scorer.
But he's produced at that level though. Like, this is the thing. I know it's different because he was on a bad team. But the shooting numbers are there. I think that the playmaking is tricky, right? Like, it's hard to judge.
But you know, though?
I don't know, man.
This is one of those things where I was watching the Auburn-Nebraska game over the weekend, and Charles Barkley was in the stands, and they had him come on to the broadcast and talk for a while. And one of the things he brought up was the idea that anyone can be a scorer on a bad team. Right. Mm-hmm. Anyone can go get points on a bad team and make themselves look good. Any player that has like real high level talent. And we've never really seen Colin over the long term be a positive piece on a winner. Now, he's gotten points efficiently on a bad team and done it at volume, which is commendable and which is why I think he's often underrated, because it is harder to do that than what I think some people will say. But I don't know if he can be a great player on a good team, and they've quickly changed into being a good team.
Like, I know
I wouldn't want to sign him to a four-year deal if I was them.
I'm with you. Like, this wasn't a decision I think that they knew they were gonna have to make, by
right
the way.
No, totally. I agree with that totally. Like,
yeah.
This is now a hard choice for them.
And for multiple reasons, by the way. Like, so not signing him during this past offseason was another chance to get, hey, let's take a look at him some more.
Yeah.
And especially now that, because Darius Garland had started to come around, okay, how is the fit here going to really be? They may not have known what they had in Mobley, although I don't know, man. They've got something there, like, for real. And so, yeah. You know, it stinks for them to be in this position. I just tend to take a little bit more of a conservative approach on this, because I do think Colin Sexton is a good player. And I mean, 417 for a guy that can score.
But he can legit
score 20. Okay, like and you might be right.
It might be more than that. Like, it might be.
But who's coming with that money? Who's coming with that money?
Yeah, that's what I'm struggling with, is like, who is the team that's going to give Colin a bunch of money? Part of the problem is that cap space is a figment of our imagination now.
Yeah, it's true.
Like, any team could sign and trade for Colin Sexton, right?
Yeah.
So who knows? Now, the thing is that could Detroit do it and pair him with Cade Cunningham?
Maybe. I mean, because
they have real cap space this summer.
And they've got, I mean, Cade is a real defender.
Yeah.
And, you know, Colin Sexton is a theoretical one at this point. I'm as far as being an average defender.
He's a high theoretical effort player.
High effort, right. And coachable, right? I don't know, man. I don't hate that at all. Like, I would much rather see a team, I guess, you know, Indy, just assuming they're going full rebuild, right? Like, mm-hmm. They're going to be trying to get in the draft in the next couple of years. And I just think with a guy like Colin Sexton, it would be better to be in a place that's going to be ready fast, because I think Colin Sexton is ready to start playing real games.
Yeah.
And Detroit, because of Cade, and I think he's going to be ready fast.
That I think could he's be a going to be fit. Ready fast. I worry about the roster. I think they're pretty far away.
Especially, well, but if you get Colin Sexton, that's a little bit of a that pushes you in the right direction. And now maybe you can go get guys, but it's Detroit.
It does. It pushes you in the right direction if they keep Jeremy Grant, which it seems is questionable. And that is the last guy that like I really wanted to bring up was Jeremy Grant. Because to me, look, other than Ben Simmons, he's probably the biggest name that seems legitimately to be out on the market. It's him or it's one of the Indiana guys, right? I don't really want to talk about Kyrie and Russell Westbrook because it seems like that stuff is a bit more speculative right now.
Who's trading for Russell Westbrook?
Yeah, I'm a little bit skeptical on that front as well. I'm not entirely sure who would do that. Yeah. On that money, that's a weird one to me. But
OKC, yeah, we'll trade you. I don't know, nothing.
Yeah,
bring him home.
I don't know what the move would be there, but Jeremy Grant, I think, is a legitimate asset that'll be worth like multiple first round picks. Now, what I'm trying to figure out is who would make that move, because a couple people I've seen have brought up Philadelphia. And I think that like Keith Pompey from the Philadelphia Inquirer reported that Jeremy Grant is one of the guys that's on Philadelphia's list as a Ben Simmons player, right? The problem is I don't want to put Ben Simmons with Cade Cunningham. Like, that does not feel like a great fit to me longer term.
You think in personality or on the court?
On the court. I don't want Cade to have to share the ball with anyone, basically. I think he's like a singular talent who should have a ball in his hands like the whole game, much in the vein of like a Trae Young, something like
Luka.
He'll make good decisions. He will make ball reversals and thus will have a lower usage rate than those guys because he's just like an unselfish personality. Mm-hmm. But I want him being the guy that brings the ball up the court every time, basically, and then makes a decision. So I don't love the Ben Simmons move at this point in Cade's development, maybe, let's say.
Okay.
So I don't know if I like that move. Maybe you could find a third team. I don't know. Who is the team? I don't know. I don't know. For Jeremy Grant, man. Like you can come up with a lot of different ideas. Like I think that like Dallas is interesting, but I don't know what Dallas would give.
Do you want some other? I mean, do you want more bad players? Right, like that's.
And they can't move picks can really, until like a while away. So
the teams that can actually trade, you know, or would actually trade for Jeremy Grant, they just don't have anything. Like right. Like you mentioned, cap space is theoretical, and so are assets for contenders.
Right.
The only contender I could think of, well, let's see, the Warriors have assets.
Yes.
Is that it? Pretty much.
Warriors have assets.
Because everyone else has made a big trade. Everyone else has cashed in. Well, maybe Phoenix has some assets.
I was
going to
say Phoenix has all of their picks, I believe.
And they have players, right? Like, I mean, you could get – if you're Phoenix and you really wanted to get in on something, like you've got guys that teams are interested in. I just don't think Phoenix – you know, they have a perfect roster. So they don't really need much. But I just don't think that there's a lot of teams out there that should necessarily even be kicking the tires on Jeremy Grant because – They just don't have anything to offer. And now maybe it's just, you know, they just want to get out of that salary. But
deal that worries me the most that, like, I have concerns about is Troy Weaver played a significant role in drafting Russell Westbrook in Oklahoma City. And I would have concerns that Detroit – and look, this comes from nothing. This is just me hoping this does not happen. This is me hoping this does not happen. It's me connecting dots. I would hope that Troy Weaver does not decide, hey, let's do like a Jeremy Grant for Russell Westbrook and like a first or something like that.
Basketball.
Because Jeremy Grant helps the Lakers a lot, actually.
If Russell Westbrook gets traded for anything that isn't a ham sandwich, we're gonna boycott the league. We're gonna make such a stink. I just don't see how like that Russell Westbrook deal.
The only reason I bring up Russ
feels untradeable.
The only reason I bring up Russ is because Jake Fisher in Bleacher Report reported that the Lakers have held internal discussions on if they should move Russell Westbrook or not. Because not worked as well as what they were hoping.
Well, and they just don't have other contracts that really can be traded. That's the other thing.
Right.
Signed a lot of one-year deals, minimums. And I mean, it's like, okay, well, who's this guy with the big number? Well, we might be able to trade him, but
yeah,
he's like, not good.
I believe they can't move Talen Horton-Tucker until January 15th because of...
Because he was an extension.
Re-signing, but yeah.
Yeah.
They can move Kendrick Nunn now, but Kendrick Nunn's deal is only $5 million. I only bring this up. I don't really want to talk about Russ because I don't think they're going to move him.
Yeah.
But that's my like main concern is that Detroit hopefully does not make that move. Because again, I want Cade Cunningham to have the ball in his hands, period, point blank. Right?
Yeah.
That's what I would like to see. But
but also it's funnier if the Lakers are stuck playing Russell Westbrook.
And honestly, from an experimental perspective, I'm curious. Like I want to see what they do in the playoffs when the game slows down to the half court and they have to figure out how to make it work. I had Jovan Bua on the podcast last week, and Jovan kind of brought up some different things that the Lakers tried to do over the course of Russ's short tenure there so far. Please go listen to that show. But I'm intrigued by the Lakers having to experiment a little bit. I'm intrigued by that idea. I just don't know that it's great, right? to make LeBron's final years an experiment as opposed to just like a, hey, this is an easy like contention window for the Lakers. Right.
Sure.
That's what I would prefer, but I'm also a little bit intrigued by the experimentation. It's the Jerami Grant thing is fascinating because I would not really want him if I was Boston, you know, some of the teams we've talked about so far. Because again, like another guy who's not a great passer, I would not want that. Miami just doesn't really have like the assets to move unless they move Duncan Robinson for him. And again, I think that would have to be later in the season. It's hard to find the contender that needs Jerami Grant, I think.
I tend to agree with that. Not that there's a better version available, but just most of the contenders have a better guy on their team.
Yeah, and it's just like hard to make the salary matching totally work.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's kind of because it's kind of this weird like middle class contract.
Yeah.
And there's just not that many.
It's a weird number. You know, like Cleveland, I guess you could again bring up here, like maybe Cleveland would be interesting.
Now that's again, back to your maybe Sexton to Detroit, like that's more interesting to me. Would be that. Because Jerami Grant as their three is
that would actually really
super
help them.
Fascinating. Yeah.
Yeah.
It also allows you a little bit of that Okoro insurance because Okoro winds up having to guard a lot of guys that are a little bit bigger than him. And when his offense isn't great, the marketing deal is really like sort of looming large in my head when I think about Cleveland. It's the only big miss I can think of that they've made in the last couple seasons.
You know what, though? He's been good.
Right.
He's been good.
I just keep waiting for the shoe to drop, right? And maybe that's more of an indictment of myself than it is Lauri Markkanen or what the Cavs are doing, because right as of a quarter of the way through the season, he's been pretty good.
Yep.
I mean, even guarding threes on the wing, like I've been impressed. And it makes me think, to a certain degree, it's sort of like Kyle Kuzma. You remember where it was like, all right, well, Kuzma, you're 6'10", you're a little skinny, you're going to be a small ball five, stretch four. And it turns out, no, man, he's a wing. You got to have him guarding wings. And then next thing you know, he's an above-average defender because he uses his length. And maybe Lowry's another guy that's like that. Now, we need to see more, but I have been impressed with Lowry so far. But I don't hate Jerami Grant in Cleveland. What about Memphis?
Memphis is interesting, too. I don't know what Memphis would be willing to give up. Maybe like the Kyle Anderson deal. And then I think they have a couple of extra first round picks. So like maybe yeah. it's like Kyle Anderson and Tyus Jones for Jeremy Grant plus two firsts.
I think Memphis is too good right now. So Memphis is too good to make a trade. Everybody's playing too well.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I don't know that I'm like a huge fan of fast tracking that, but maybe Jeremy Grant right. is the kind well, of guy see, where it is interesting for them though.
See that I think about it. Your lack of interest in fast tracking Memphis is the same, and I feel the same way about them too. But that's exactly how I feel about Cleveland, right?
Yeah, I look,
the similarities are striking, man. You've got Darius Garland as sort of like Ja Morant with a 3-pointer. You've got Evan Mobley as like this proto Jaren Jackson who actually might be a lot better even now. And now you've got you're getting some other young players. They don't have the stash of.
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't have the stash of young guys that Memphis does, but they also, you know, they had a bare cupboard after LeBron left. So they've rebuilt from zero in a couple of seasons to now have a good team. I'm very impressed. I actually think that, you know, sneakily, they've been a very good front office for a few years now.
Cleveland or Memphis?
Cleveland. Well, Memphis, yes, we know.
Yeah.
Because they just draft good players. Cleveland has really come a long way. And so I don't want to see them fast track it either, because I do think that what they're building, similar to Memphis, is going to be sustainable. Like this is how you build a team that's good for a really long time. Like Evan Mobley might be their Tim Duncan. The same way I thought Jaren Jackson could be the Tim Duncan for Memphis. Like, hey, this is a guy who might be a Hall of Fame level talent that you get to build around. And oh, wait, we got Ja Morant. Oh, maybe he's your Tim Duncan. You know, like this is especially getting them at 19 years old, and for them, and Mobley has come in, I think, more effective than Jaren because he didn't have the foul issues that Jaren. I mean, Jaren's fouling just really plagued him. But Mobley has come in as one of the more effective rookies I can remember, and
I agree.
I haven't been covering the league that long, but so effective, such a high level, and you see where the ceiling's going to go because there's stuff that he's adding to his game already. So, you know, I just generally would like to see everyone just kind of like, okay, let's just ride this out. We're already good. We got a potential future MVP. I mean, I'm really very high on Evan Mobley.
Evan Mobley's really good. I don't think he's a future. I think it's unlikely he's a future MVP, but I would not take it off the table. Like,
I mean, he doesn't handle the ball enough, but
the very few guys in the league that I think you can't take it off the table with. It's unlikely that he's going to win MVP because only one guy wins MVP every year.
Right? Every year, right.
But you can't take it off the table, which is saying a lot. The last guy that I want to bring up here is a guy that both Shams and Jake Fisher have reported is available, and that's Cam Reddish. The Hawks are apparently interested in a first-round pick for Cam Reddish. If I was a team like Houston and I had a first, like I have the Miami first round pick in the 20s this year, I would be calling it.
What about Utah?
Utah's interesting, sure. Like as a big wing
Utah,
defender. Yeah.
They've needed that guy forever and you could get Cam Reddish. Oof. Yes.
I think Cam should be in on it. Like
I think every damn team in the league should be calling. Milwaukee should call. Cam Reddish is good, and he's going to get better.
Yeah.
Plain and simple.
Look, and Portland? Part of the reason that Atlanta is doing this is because they're going to have a future salary cap crunch, right?
They got too many guys. Hunter going down is a great chance for them to kind of get a look at this, you know, consolidated roster a little bit. They made the decision on Herter, right? So you knew one of Hunter or Reddish were likely out.
Right.
And I actually think moving early is smarter on their part because not only have you made it, it signals that you've made a decision, but you're going to get more value for Cam Reddish. And I mean, look, man, I'm telling you, if you look at what Phoenix has done by just getting as many of these wing guys that can do stuff as possible, the Warriors, I mean, the dribble, pass, and shoot guys who can also defend. Now, some of this is theoretical for Cam, but we know he can defend.
Yeah,
I don't know, man. I'd be throwing a lot. I love Cam Reddish, though. I'm a big Cam Reddish fan.
Look, if it's a first-round pick and that's the price and you are going to have to pay Cam Reddish this summer, I'm I'm comfortable with that. Like, I'm comfortable giving him a deal, and I am comfortable giving up first round pick for him. Like, that's what the reporting has been consistent in both the Jake Fisher reporting and the Shams reporting, saying that Atlanta's looking for a first round pick for Cam Reddish. I mean, look, obviously I think they're going to try and get the best first round pick they can.
Of course.
But yeah, like a team, I would do that. I would pretty easily do that.
Could Detroit get him?
Could Detroit get him? Detroit can't move first round picks.
Cleveland. Now, Cleveland would be a fantastic landing spot for Cam Reddish. He would line up perfectly with their timeline, and he would solve a lot of problems. So let's get on the phone and make that deal happen.
Cleveland would be interesting. Cleveland would be interesting for Cam Reddish.
Make Atlanta give Cam Reddish to Cleveland, because Cleveland's not allowed to make any trades.
Love it.
I don't know what they would move, but I mean, Cleveland can't give up their own first. I don't think that they're there yet, right? Like, you need to make sure that you're actually this good. But they've got picks, man. I Cleveland should call about Cam Reddish. I like this.
That's not a bad idea either. I like that one. It was not a bad idea to have Dave Dufour on this podcast, folks. Dave, tell the people where they can find you.
Everything I do is at The Athletic. Go to theathletic.com/gametheory now. Sign up. What's the deal, Sam?
Probably 50% off right now.
I think
it's holiday season, right? We're closing.
Great
in on
gift.
That.
It's a great gift.
Yeah.
For Christmas.
Or it is for a great any gift holiday. For Christmas.
Or because it's Wednesday.
Or because it's Wednesday. I think that that's.
And your mom loves this show. This is what I've been telling everybody on the pods. Your mom loves to hear this show.
Oh,
buy
I'm
your
sure.
mom a subscription to The Athletic.
Look, we talked about baking for like 8 minutes at the top of this show.
Hey, I've got a poolish, okay, setting up that I'm going to try to whip up some dough.
Love it.
I mean, that's you don't get this sort of coverage on any other podcast. It's baking and basketball.
Go listen to the Nerd or She Wrote podcast over on the Athletic NBA show feed. You're going to get Dave Dufour. You're going to get Seth Partnow. You're going to get Mo DeKeel. Hard to imagine a better trio than that group. I will be back on Friday. Today is Wednesday in the United States. I'll be back on Friday with Matthew Penny, attorney of basketball law. Penny is going to be here. We're going to talk about prospects. We'll have prospect of the week. We'll have mailbag questions. We'll have anything that you're looking for. But until next time, folks, we will talk soon. Bye.